Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm here. Kyle is here. Kyle, I propose that for 1 week and 1 week only, we change the name of the podcast to Fuck Troy Aikman. How do you feel about that?
Fuck Troy Aikman. God.
That son of a bitch.
I'm sort of wondering if Jaden Daniels' mom did. So that was about the way he handled that game. Good
you Lord. Think that's part of Jaden's greater PR strategy?
Just might be,
send
yeah.
his mom out, a literal, create an army of actual motherfuckers just to shit on Caleb.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, I hope this sets the tone for the podcast, people. We're going to impugn Jaden's mom, Jaden himself, Troy Aikman,
Emmett
Smith.
I actually don't really want to spend that much time on Jaden Daniels. You know what? I really don't.
I do.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit. whining about announcer bias is loser shit. It's usually loser shit. Because, normally when Bears fans, it's Bears fans watching a game between Mitch Trubisky and Aaron Rodgers, and they're like, why is Chris Collinsworth talking about Aaron Rodgers so much? Because he's clearly the better player. Because he's clearly,
to talk about Mitch Trubisky, right?
Right. When you have Jaden Daniels throwing the football right at Jaquan Brisker's dick in the red zone, and Troy Aikman is hyping up how happy he looks on the sidelines after, how steady he stays. He's smiling while he's ripping Caleb for every goddamn fucking thing.
And we've seen this before, with Philip Rivers and his blow-ups on the sideline. People would be like, oh, he's got grit. Oh,
right.
He wants to get his
Rivers
team under control.
Jay Cutler,
Right, right. And in this case, I mean, it felt like it even at the time. And I mean, I'm seeing non-Bears fans out there saying the same thing. Who would ever say that about a guy laughing and joking after he threw an interception? I've never seen that take before.
If Caleb Williams had committed a turnover in the red zone and had been spotted laughing and smiling on the sideline, Troy Aikman would have gone fucking nuclear. And it was clear just the whole way that entire broadcast was presented. They had a script going in. They expected Washington to win. Mm-hmm. They expected Caleb to play poorly. They expected Jaden to dominate. And, they did not deviate from the script no matter what was actually happening. They fucking called in Lisa Salters to give a report about how
To fluff awesome, his balls.
To
yeah.
fluff Jaden Daniels up and how awesome he was. And, when you had... Okay, you have the snap... Dahlman snaps the ball wide, early, wide, and almost over Caleb's head. Caleb catches the ball. It takes a second. He bobbles it, but he does secure the football.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Troy Aikman literally say, you got to secure the, yes, it's high. Yes, it's wide, but you got it coming in hot, but you got to secure the football first and foremost. And then on the last drive of the game for the Commanders, Jaden never secures the football. He's bobbling it the whole fucking time. He goes to hand it off, fumbles the game away. For Washington, and Troy Aikman's just he never has it, these conditions, this rain, it's so fucking transparent, and I mean, we had a whole episode called Everybody Hates Caleb, we've gone into detail about why we think people hate Caleb. I think a lot of it, frankly, is the non-masculine way in which he presents himself. One of the most despicable things I thought the broadcast did was when they were like, Caleb has a whole support structure on the Bears sideline to keep him from freaking out, you know, and they're like, here he is with his quarterback coach, they're going over plays, they portrayed that special
downside.
They portrayed that like it's just some special handling thing that they do for Caleb's emotional. That's what a quarterback coach does.
That's like his whole job.
Watch any other game in the NFL. That's what the quarterback, it doesn't matter if it's fucking Tom Brady, he goes to the sideline, the quarterback coach comes over with the pictures. They look at, that's not some special handling thing that the Bears created. What? It was just fucking insane. I felt like I was going insane.
We just got a whole fucking negative article about Caleb walking away from his coaches, allegedly. And now we have Caleb next to his coaches. Oh, it's a sign of weakness. If he went off and sat by himself, oh, he's apart from the team. If he sat with his team, you know, and he's talking to everybody, is he blaming his teammates?
Again, Caleb is, I think we would both agree, Caleb didn't play his best game last night by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's been doing a lot better about not coming out slow. He he really wanted this game badly. I think as badly as we all wanted this game did not compare to how badly Caleb Williams fucking wanted this game. And I think he came out first half was firing wide, firing hot, firing. Just he was rushing himself again. You can tell when he rushes himself. His second half settled down. He was nails. He had a beautiful touchdown throw to Rome taken off the board. You know, had a couple really bad penalties. We'll talk about that in a second. I don't think Caleb played his best game. I don't think Caleb has played his best football yet this season.
For sure.
I think we both agree. We have not seen the best that Caleb can be yet in any of this. And guess what, folks? He's still 11th in the NFL in adjusted net yards per attempt. This is with, up until last night, and we'll talk about this too because it's a very positive development, up until last night, the 32nd ranked run game in the NFL, playing a lot of third and longs, tons of pre-snap penalties on offense. Caleb Williams was 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt before that game. After that game, he's still 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt. In the aggregate, you have the 11th best passing attack in football right now. And I think we all agree that we haven't even scratched the surface of how good it can be. And it's insane to me that the narrative on that is like, Caleb's not actually playing that well, when the narrative should be that I don't think we've seen anywhere near the best that Caleb Williams can be in this offense. And it's already this fucking good. Like we talked about on the last episode or two episodes ago, all the stuff we said in camp that people were wincing and cringing about because it felt like loading the excuses into the chamber because we've done it before. It's a new system. He's a young quarterback. These guys are learning that there's this. It's going to take time to gel. New offensive. All that's true. And you see it every week with the penalties, with some of the execution issues, with some of all that stuff. Like some of the miss, even some of the misses that ever, that Troy was harping on last night were Oz sitting when Caleb expected him to keep going, or Oz going when Caleb expected him to sit. Like there's this stuff like that in every game. It's all there.
The dance between still, Oz and Caleb this season is so romantic and exotic.
And it's still been a productive NFL offense. It's still been good enough to win three games in a row. It's been good enough to score. God help me, this is the saddest stat ever, but for the first time in how many years the Bears have scored at least 20 points in every single game this season. I think it was something like 10 years, 12 years. I don't know. It was really bad. And Caleb, first Bears quarterback in fucking history to have at least 200 yards passing and a passing touchdown in the first five games of a season. That, again, says more about Bears history than Caleb. But, like, you should be looking at where Caleb is right now. And, again, 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt. And you might be like, why is he always harping on about adjusted net yards per attempt? You're probably not, though, if you listen to this podcast, because
I was going to say, we've explained it many times.
But it's literally the passing stat that has the highest correlation to winning over time. It's the most proven one. That's why it's the one I always use. It's and just like any stat, it can be messy in a small sample, but over a long enough time frame, it's the most reliable passing stat. So I keep harping on that one because all of the clusterfucks, the missed throws, all of the things that aggravate you a little bit sometime, that's all real. That's all stuff that can be cleaned up. That's all stuff that can get better. It's all stuff you should expect to get better over time. And it's still been this good so far. The sky is the fucking limit here. You and I were just talking about this earlier today because you wanted to know. Some people are worried about the completion percentage over expectation, right, blah, blah, blah. And you asked me, well, what was Jared Goff in 2022, his first eight games with Ben Johnson? I pulled it up. He was 24th in EPA, CPOE through the first nine games of the season or whatever. And over the second half of the season, he was second in the NFL in that combined metric. Like, that's... So this is something we have literally seen before with a guy learning the Ben Johnson offense in that first year. And Caleb's playing considerably better than Goff was in that first half in 2022. Caleb is already like, and it's still messy and it's still clunky. Like it should be, if this was any other second year quarterback and this was any other head coach like Ben Johnson, if this was any other situation, people would be looking like they've done this much so far through five games and they're still finding their footing. They're still learning. They're still putting it together. The sky is the limit here. And for some reason, it's just every fucking throw, every half is a referendum on the kid. Nobody will get off his dick. And Troy Aikman was just a fucking despicable performance there. And I'm glad that the Bears got the dub right in front of Troy. I mean, even on that last drive, nobody wants to see Jake Moody here. And you just talking about, and he had one block tonight. It came out. I mean, he was just willing that Mr. Block field goal. You could just hear the angst in his voice. You could tell he's like, please, please give me this narrative. Please give me the Jaden Daniels does it again narrative. Let me have it. You could feel the sadness in his voice.
And, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it's even a little bit overstated because we've had this the next day and there's been such a strong backlash from Bears fans against Aikman. I like that Caleb did, you know, poorly in this game. He had some misses, man, but God, the Bears were driving and driving and driving. And really what stopped the Bears from putting this game away really early, it was just these horrible flags. Like, I mean, we've talked about Aikman, which is just the nadir of this game, but that was only amplified by the insane bullshit calls from the refs in this game. Another thing that I hate to harp on, like you said, it's loser shit talking about, oh, the refs are against us. You know, the refs are giving all these penalties to the other team. But again, the Bears won this game. I feel like we should mention that just for posterity. The Bears did win. We're kind of negative at the beginning. We're going to get into all the awesome stuff. But those referees were making up penalties against the Bears. Theo Benedet apparently just lined up offsides for a touchdown to Rome.
I love when the rules official that they have in the booth was just, or they have called it the booth, was like, I can't see what they're talking about. They tried to find video footage of the face mask on Nashawn Wright and couldn't do it. Literally got a penalty because the Washington receiver put his head down. They didn't even bother showing a replay of DJ Moore because we pulled it up on the All-22. There, he fucking wasn't offsides.
Yeah.
Ben Johnson saying, shut the fuck up, as they literally mid-sentence changed the penalty from one on Washington to one on DJ Moore for a phantom off. Like, it was...
Calling an offsides penalty on Washington and then changing it, not calling a penalty, not giving us what the fucking name of the penalty was, but saying, ooh, sorry, 5-yard penalty on the fucking Bears for nothing, for no reason. The most, how do you not investigate that referee unit after a display like that? Yeah. Like, I know, I understand this is a young referee group. This is, you know, they've called the most penalties in the NFL. I think you were firing off that tweet every few seconds every time they threw a flag in the game, you know. Yeah. But this was all against the Bears, every single penalty.
Yeah, I mean, do I think it was straight up rigged? No, but like I think bad officials are often the ones that are most susceptible to home cooking. And I think they felt the pressure there, and they were definitely, you know, and I just And it sucks now in an era where gambling is legal, sports betting is legalized, that you almost like, I don't want to ever go there, but like, man, would you have officiated that game much differently if you had bet Washington money line? I don't know that you would have.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like if they like, and yeah, and it sucks for Caleb too, because no, Caleb did not play his best game yet. But at the same time, his night looks a lot different if that amazing touchdown throw to Rome counts. And if the pass he threw to Colston Loveland to get them down to like the 10 or whatever it was, doesn't come back on phantom offensive pass interference. Like literally you watch the All-22, they called offensive pass interference because that guy was already bailing to drop back into his zone and cover three, and he tripped over himself, and they blamed it on Colston Loveland, which was bullshit. Yeah. They like Caleb had a lot of, he had that throw to Kmet that was taken back, and then Oz dropped what could have been a 96-yard.
It looks like a 96-yard touchdown. Yeah.
Like it was not Caleb's, but, and this is the thing I was talking about with Ben Johnson that we were talking about. Like, if this is the floor for Caleb, and I think these five games are the floor for Caleb in this offense, and I think last night especially, like, the floor now looks like, yeah, he missed some throws. Yeah, he was a little wild, but at the end of the day, he was 17 of 29 for 252 yards, 8.7 yards per attempt, had two total touchdowns, and had a 98 passer rating or whatever. That's the floor now. It's not he threw for 120 yards and took 9 sacks while facing the Patriots like it was last year. The floor has been changed.
Yeah,
and I think he has an opportunity to really go off here over the next 5-6 weeks too.
Yeah, you mentioned this to start the year when you were talking about your analysis of guys. Like, you're willing to come off of your prediction for a guy or what you expect of him as long as he proves it. As long as he disproves something about, you know, your hypothesis or your notion, at that point you'll come off it. But if everything is lining up with what you thought before the season, it simply strengthens that idea. Before the season, when we were talking about this, my thoughts were, okay, don't believe in Caleb. That's fine. I understand that. It's a young quarterback. Last year looked brutal at times. But how do you second guess Ben Johnson? How do you question what Ben Johnson does? You know, how do you think that he can like get all this out of Jared Goff? And allegedly Jared Goff is this fraud. You know, Jared Goff was terrible for a long time in this league until Ben Johnson got a hold of him. Was that all just a fluke? Like, and my hypothesis was, you know, the floor for Caleb is going to be pretty high because this offense is going to be working great. Even if Caleb has a bad night, Ben is going to be able to scheme up something that supports him. Lo and behold, you know, we have a great coaching staff right now. The staff was like, all right, he's a little bit off. We're going to scheme up plays that he can run right now where it's not going to matter, that are going to play to his strengths. He goes out there and we end the game. He's got 8.7 yards per attempt. Yeah. You know, is a lot of it off screens, is a lot of it off short passes. Absolutely. But guess what? This is the fucking NFL.
There were still some damn good throws there. I mean, he had a dart to DJ Moore in the first half. The throw to Rome that got called back was a fucking dime. He had that beautiful throw to Burden on the play action pass, which is a beautiful play design, but like also just like whatever, even though Troy said he was late, he wasn't fucking late. Fuck you, Troy. Beautiful pass to lead.
Yeah, fuck Burden you, Troy.
It was fucking horrible. I still angry about it. But yeah, but Caleb, I will say this. Caleb was not the star of last night.
No.
I don't think he was as bad as fucking PFF said, but I don't want to get into PFF grades, whatever. PFF grades are what they are.
Yeah, fuck you, Troy.
Fuck you, Troy. Fuck you, PFF. Fuck you, NFL officiating. Fuck you, Jaden Daniels.
We're talking, like, as hot as we've been today, and as we were last night, you would think the Bears lost. The Bears won this game.
I think it's time to fucking trade. Yeah, it's time to trade here, because Caleb.
The Bears won this game, like, pretty handily, if you take out a couple of phantom penalties.
That's what also drives me nuts, too, because, the narrative, so you went off on Robert Mays, and I don't want to pile on Robert, because I think Robert...
Oh, he fucking deserves it.
I think Robert's a nice guy who is a Bears fan who's deeply traumatized, like we all are, and he sometimes just has a little trouble letting that go. But here's the thing. Even using Robert's own logic, so last week, or not 2 weeks ago, against the Raiders, his logic was, and I sort of saw it, he's like, the Raiders were the better team on a per-play basis. They outgained the Bears. They this, they that. It was just fluke turnovers. The Bears should almost feel bad for stealing that win. I don't buy that, but okay. But then by your own logic, who had more yards in that game? It was the Bears. Who was more successful on a per-play basis? It was the Bears. Who had more yards per play? It was the Bears. Who won the turnover battle 3-0? It was the Bears. By every metric, the fluke, and who needed ref assistance, phantom roughing the passer calls and phantom face mask calls on their only scoring drives. It was the Commanders. Like, by that logic, if the Commanders had stolen that win, they would have been the thieves. They should have felt bad they won that game. The Bears outplayed them all night long. But for a brief stretch that was very heavily aided by the officials. But the Bears didn't steal it. The Commanders didn't steal it. The Bears won it. They won the game they should have won because they were the better fucking team all night long. Fuck you, man.
Yeah. Just look at the game for what it is. Stop looking at it as this is just a Bears game. Yeah. The Bears of the past have won games in which bullshit happened. Right. And first of all, a lot of those games weren't bullshit. A lot of those games were won by a Hall of Fame worthy defense. In some cases, the best defense, one of the best defenses we've ever seen in the NFL, regardless of season. Sometimes we've been bullshit merchants, man. We were all there for 2001. That was a crazy ride with the Chicago Bears. This is not that team. You know, we're still the Chicago Bears. It's a whole different staff. It's all different players. Just fucking look at the Bears like you do any other team in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, and first of all, and they came out with a great game plan on the defensive side of the ball. Allen and Brisker absolutely baited Jaden Daniels into that interception. It was a play that they'd seen on tape the Commanders run. They know he's going to try to throw that seam ball right there to Debo. And Brisker fakes covering the flat, which is his normal responsibility in that, but then he baits the seam ball, picks it off. That was masterful. They did a great job. I mean, if you take away the Jaden scrambles, the Commanders design run game, they probably perform better against the Commanders on the design run game than anybody has, any defense has this season. And that's with what had been the NFL's worst run defense coming into the game. Everybody thought the Commanders were just going to getting TJ Edwards back. I'll say this about TJ. I criticize that extension.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple moments where you watch the broadcast game and you're like, you see Jaden juke him out of his shoes, and you see, and this is not on TJ, Dennis Allen blitzed him from depth a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I said on Twitter that you might as well blitz a Walmart greeter, because that just, TJ does not have the speed to be blitzing from depth. But I watched the All 22, and you really see just on the actual design run plays by the Commanders, the read and recognition of TJ Edwards, the run fits there. He played really well, and that did make, for as much as I thought Noah Sewell had kind of surprised us the first couple weeks of the season filling in, his athleticism definitely better than what TJ brings. He does not have that kind of read and react that TJ has. You could really see that in the gaps he was filling in, the way he was fitting the run against Washington. So that was huge to have him back, huge to have Kyler back.
Would have loved to see more of Noah Sewell out there if the coward Jonathan Ford hadn't taken him out of the fucking game.
But it was just a great game plan from Dennis Allen. I mean, Jaden did get his a couple times. I mean, I thought the thing about Jaden is, if you make a mistake, he fucking crushes it. He really does. That they blew two coverages, he threw two dimes both times. Like, he does that. Overall, great game plan from Dennis Allen, who's still not working with a whole lot on the defensive line, but really had a good game plan there. Ben Johnson's game plan was fantastic. And obviously, I mean, this man, he's like, I stay up late at night worrying about this run game, trying to get this run game right. You can tell it was the focus and the bye. They put the Canadian Eagle in there. And by God, they got the fucking run game going, man. They really did. DeAndre Swift, haven't always been kind to DeAndre on this podcast, but he had the game of his fucking life, man. DeAndre, obviously the MVP of that game last night.
Yeah, no question. Like Ben has been saying for weeks, this is, the blocking is an issue people will bring up in press conferences. They'd be saying, like, what about DeAndre Swift? Are you looking to get another running back? What about giving Monongai more carries? What about bringing Roschon Johnson in? And every time Ben's response has been, hey, how about the run blocking is shit?
Yeah.
Like, we need to get that stepped up. And we saw it at the end of the Vegas game. We saw Braxton come out, Theo Benedict come in, and the run game was instantly rejuvenated. It was honestly kind of like, it felt a little bit fluky because of how immediate it was. It felt like, oh, there's no way that's like that much of a difference, right? And this game proved it. Braxton Jones was just a massive negative in the run blocking scheme, apparently. This was a terrible game for Braxton Jones, who did not play. But, just like watching the Bears run game suddenly turn into a Ben Johnson run game just because we put in an undrafted Canadian rookie who missed all of last year with an injury instead of Braxton Jones going into a contract. That is fucking hard, bro. Like, it's as hard as watching Cairo Santos lose his job.
And I tell you what, man, you watch Theo in that game, and that you talk about a guy that embodies the best of that undrafted spirit. He was launching off the ball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he knows what his limitations are. He knows he doesn't have those great tackle arms. That's a shame, because I think if that guy had legitimate tackle arms, that's the find of the century right there.
Yeah.
But he knows what he has to do, because, I mean, he was firing off the damn ball. Every snap, he was leaving it all out there on the field. Like, he was flying around like a fucking maniac. It wasn't always pretty. He definitely got beat a couple times by Dorrance Armstrong, but it's not, I don't think it's a surprise at all that Joe Tooney had his best game of the season now that he wasn't covering for the guy next to him on every snap. Another dude I think we need to shout out is a dude that you were pretty hard on. Travis, since week one, I think Jonah Jackson's been pretty damn good.
Cromulent. Completely cromulent right guard. Yeah,
Been like secretly elite? No, but what I said was, if you ended up trading, what was it? Was it a sixth? Wasn't it for Jonah?
I thought it was a sixth round pick.
Yeah,
sixth,
it was a four
for
Tooney. It was a sixth
fifth
for Jonah.
Conditional fifth.
Yeah, I was like, if you trade a sixth for a guy who ends up being a average starting guard, that's a fucking steal, and that's what Jonah's been so far. And I think even a little bit more than average in the run game. And also, let us shout the return of the king. That might have been the best fucking game of Darnell Wright's career, and he's doing it with one working arm again. Like, they confirmed he's got a fucking torn UCL. The man's going to need Tommy John Sunday. They shot a God knows what they shot into his arm before that game. They let him rest up over the bye week, but he was out there on that game sealing drive. He was blocking two guys at a time, just bowling people over.
Oh yeah.
I mean, just screaming weight room. And we told people last week, 2 weeks ago, I keep forgetting we had the bye week. We told people during that Raiders game, like, this is how you people know you don't appreciate Darnell Wright enough. Like, you saw how Max Crosby almost single-handedly stole a win from the Bears just by wrecking shit with Darnell Wright. God, you get Darnell back, and you are just – he's just fucking destroying people. That was a fucking statement game from Darnell Wright.
That block from Darnell that you sent me on the big run by DeAndre Swift around the right side, where he goes around the outside, and he just sticks his left hand out and throws one guy – and then immediately goes to his right and blocks two other guys. That's the kind of shit that gets you paid, Darnell. That's the good shit. You just show Ryan Poles that next offseason, and you're like, hey, buddy, how much is this worth? That's worth a lot, is the answer. But yeah, Theo Benedet was great. Jackson has been, I guess, kind of like predictably good. I think the issue with not with Jonah Jackson, but the issue is, week one in the NFL now is just garbage. Preseason. It's trash. It's preseason now. Yeah, it is a worthless week. It tells you nothing about anybody. And sometimes you get lucky enough that a result matches what the quality of a team will be the rest of the year. But it's random fucking chance at this point. So I'm sorry, Jonah. At this point, honestly, moving forward, I'm not going to make any fucking judgment after week one at all.
I don't believe you.
Let's start week two.
I do not believe you for a second. This man lives to overreact to 1 week of football.
Luke Newman was inactive this week, and I thought that really spoke to the confidence that Ben had on that right side as well. I feel like he's wanted Jonah to succeed. Obviously, he knew Jonah from a couple years ago. The reason we brought him in is because Ben said, hey, no, that guy's not broken. Like, you know, I love Jonah. Bring him in here. He's going to be great in my scheme. And he's been right. Like, the whole Bears offensive line clicked, and it's because Braxton Jones wasn't in there. And I'm fucking sad about it, quite honestly. Also, like, I'm happy.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's awful for Braxton.
It sort of feels like, as it, like when you were a Cub fan and things came together in 2015, but it coincided with Starlin Castro having the worst year of his career, and it was clear he wasn't. He was on the way. It's like, you were the best player when this was a shitty offensive line, and now that it's potentially a good one, you're just not that guy anymore. And that really sucks, because he was a guy that we rooted hard for, and I really wanted him to get his money. But hopefully, you know, hopefully now that he's on the bench, hopefully he heals up. And he's going to have to sign a 1 year prove it deal, but he might be able to. He's still young enough that maybe he does prove it. Maybe that paycheck comes next
year. He may be back later this year. Yeah, offensive line injuries happen. We're probably going to see him.
I mean, yeah, who knows? It may end up being a blessing in disguise that he gets some time now to just truly rest and build up. And maybe if we see him again down the road, he looks more like the guy we remember. I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, a lot of it, and that's what we talked about this last time, though, what was concerning was a lot of it was not Darnell being injured and slow. That would have been a little bit easier to understand. It was just Darnell blowing assignments left and right. Like, and say what you will about the Canadian Eagle, he wasn't blowing shit. He knew where he was supposed to be. He was launching himself on every snap. He was gonna get his guy or die trying. And you know, Ben Johnson, the fucking maniac that he is, loves to see it. Speaking of Ben Johnson, did you see him taking shots at Troy Aikman today?
Yep.
He didn't say it by name, but saying, you know, yeah, I watched the broadcast, and, you know, it sounds like some people didn't seem like they were really happy with the way we were winning that game. But that's okay. You know, in this league, nobody respects you till you earn it. So, and I love that. I love that, like, and Caleb at 4 a.m. apparently retweeting TikToks about how everybody was shitting on the Bears saying they couldn't do it. I want these guys to be fucking petty. I want them to take, like, use it as fuel. Absolutely. Like, if you're Caleb Williams, like, Troy Aikman has made it resoundingly clear, buddy, that nobody is going to fucking give you the benefit of the doubt. Nobody's going to give you your flowers. So, like, you know what, Caleb, if you can't be the hero, go be the fucking villain, man. Go.
I will say the backlash to Aikman shitting on him this whole game for no reason has started to, I think, turn the screw a little bit on the Caleb narrative. I have seen a lot of not Bears fans being like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. In that game? I thought it was nice that, honestly, I thought Kurt Warner was a bit more complimentary of Caleb and how he played than I expected. I mean, I fair warning, I stayed up way too damn late last night because I'm glad that we have like six noon games in a row because
these
Bears primetime games, especially when they win, I get way too damn jacked, can't fall asleep. I did not have time today. I haven't watched the All 22, so I really can't give you the like true, honest. Actually, Caleb was better than I, but like Kurt Warner watched it. And Kurt Warner was like, I thought he, you know, of course he missed some throw. And I think Kurt Warner also just understanding the nuances of the position. People really overreact to missed throws. And that's been the Caleb narrative so far this year, in my opinion. It drives people insane because it's like, God, he was open. You suck so bad if you missed that. But like, to me, I've seen guys fix missed throws with time. Like, I've seen guys improve, like, especially when their accuracy is footwork related, when it's Caleb playing too fast, when it's feet not going to his, you know, that kind of stuff. Time on task will fix that. Yeah. Communication, reps will fix that. Like, to me, it'd be much more concerning if I felt like he's not seeing it, if he's not, but like, he's doing all of the sustainable stuff. And I think that's what Kurt Warner really gets jazzed on. And then he was talking about that on the Score today. He was like, I'm really excited that you watch this offense with Caleb and Ben Johnson, and it's an NFL offense. It's something that Kurt Warner recognizes, because Kurt Warner played for Martz, and he recognizes the Martz elements in this. And like, this is not, they are not doing anything gimmicky. They are not doing, and they're not doing fake RPO trickery. And the thing that I love about that is that I think if Ben so chooses, that's a weapon he can later deploy. Like, if he wants to start adding the wrinkles that Sean Payton has to use every week just to make Bo Nix look functional. If he starts adding a little bit of that just for the fun of it, the Bears will get some gimmies that way, I think. But like, for the most part, they're just doing bread and butter, straight dropbacks, five step drops, seven step drops, full field reads. Nothing's being dumbed down. And Caleb's not always, he's missing the throws sometimes, but his eyes are great. Everything that he's doing well feels sustainable. Everything, same thing. Everything that he's struggling with accuracy-wise feels fixable, feels correctable. I get that it's frustrating, but like, I would so much rather come away from, look at a guy and be like, yeah, you just got to fix his feet a little bit. He's got to get, you know, that, and just, you know, that stuff's going to get better. And we have examples of plenty of guys who, in Jared Goff, in this system, we have an example of a guy who is now known for being the most accurate quarterback in the NFL, a CPOE god. Like, his first eight games in this system, the accuracy was rough. The CPOE in year one with Ben Johnson was not what it was in year two, was not what it was in year three. Like, and the other guy I was comparing Caleb to, you know, they were very, the conference, they played for Lincoln Riley, they came from similar systems, had very similar profiles in the spreadsheet, had similar strengths and weaknesses, is Baker Mayfield. And like, you look at what Baker Mayfield has continued to become. Like, the growth doesn't stop here. You should be, like, Caleb is nowhere near fully formed. I think, like, I'm like, am I losing my mind here? Like, this is the guy, this is a Chicago Bears quarterback. He's in his second year. He has ungodly amounts of talent. Again, it's been messy. I'm not denying that it's been messy. I'm not denying that he hasn't played as well as he possibly can. And he's still 11th. In adjusted net yards per down. All I can think is that, like,
living in an NFL reality.
There's so
much
more room to grow, and that should excite you. And people are just mad because they want it all now.
Yeah.
And
we are this fucking season. We are living in the year of comeback stories, right? We are living in the year of guys who took years to develop. We are in the year of Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, MVP candidate, right? All three guys who were given up on and left for dead by franchises, who got impatient, who decided that they didn't need to do the actual job that a coaching staff is meant to do, developing players, bring them along, taking that talent and refining it into an actual professional. And of course, there are a bunch of people looking at Caleb Williams, and this year, looking across the fucking street at Daniel Jones in Indianapolis, and these idiots are saying, well, if Caleb isn't already the perfect quarterback right now, he'll never be the perfect quarterback. And they're looking at Daniel Jones. Well,
and
their excuse is, well, he must have always been good in New York. I've seen this take so many times, and it's driving me nuts. It's, he was always good in New York, and New York was bad and couldn't pull that potential out of Daniel Jones. Like, just give them time. We used to know this, Kyle. When you and I were kids, it was base knowledge. quarterbacks take a long time to develop. You, right. There's going to be growing pains with a young guy. Ben Roethlisberger was good his rookie year. The entire fucking thing changed, and it's never.
Well, and I think it's sense. I think it's because you saw the rookie wage scale accelerates things, but also I think you saw for a while there you saw college offenses and NFL offenses become closer together than ever before. Like when you had Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick kind of bring the wildcat and the read option and the stuff that they were doing with Cam Newton, you saw those things kind of acclimate, or you saw those things kind of blend together. And so there was a window in there where I think it was easier for guys to make the sudden. And you still see guys like Kingsbury basically makes no bones about the fact that they are literally just running the offense that Jaden Daniels ran at LSU.
Yeah.
You still see guys doing that to some extent, but like, I think for those two things got as close, NFL and college offenses got as close as they've ever been there for a couple years, and that led to earlier success for quarterbacks than we were used to for a long time. But Vic Fangio then kind of developed the counters to all that, and his ideas have proliferated, and scoring has gone down, and we have seen defenses really counterpunch, and there's not as many easy buttons as before. And I think you're going to see guys start to go back to and also I think there's two different kinds of prospects now, because COVID also fucked that up too, where you have the Jaden Daniels, the Bo Nixes, and all those guys who are 5-6 year starters with 2,000 reps coming in.
Yeah.
So they're acclimating a little differently than Caleb and Drake May being, you know, 21-22. And not only having a couple years under their belt and then going straight to the NFL, I think you're going to see guys have a little bit more of that traditional development again. But also, it's not like this is the Justin Fields cope that people were in when they were like, yeah, he's straight up bad for 2 years, sure. But so was Josh Allen, and he turned around. Because those examples are rare no matter what kind of part of history you're looking at. But that's the point that I'm making, is we're not talking about a guy who's playing badly. We're talking about a guy who is, by at least one of the most important metrics, the 11th best quarterback in the NFL so far this year, and he's still got room to improve and room to grow, and everyone sees it, and like that should excite you. Like, so I'm not making excuses for a guy who's blundering here. I'd be pretty fucking nervous right now if I was making excuses for Bo Nix. I'm not.
Yeah.
So like he's good, and I think he can be great. People are upset that they're not seeing consistent great again, and I get it, but like just
give it time. It's got to, I said at the beginning of the season, we're going to give it at least 8 games. They're going to develop, hopefully game 9. We're looking at an offense that's really, you know, clicked in. Yeah. I think the defense is the same way. They've been progressing well. This is not the finished result for the Bears, and they're still 3-2. They just beat Washington. You know, the vibes are real good. Kyle, you mentioned Justin Fields. You mentioned RPOs. So I have to point out, did you notice there's never a better sign that a guy doesn't really understand what he's looking at? What did Jaden Daniels do? One of the few calls the Bears got in their favor. It was an eligible man downfield because Jaden Daniels ran an RPO and did a pump fake and then threw the ball. Yeah. The Justin Fields special, I don't understand how this play actually works. I just know I have to run it. Because anybody who has ever run an RPO should know that if you don't throw the fucking ball immediately, you now have to run because your lineman is downfield. That's how the play works.
Well, the thing about Jaden is that, like, when I say that, like, he is very much, like, well, he's very similar to Jalen Hurts. And I'm not saying that he's bad or that what he's doing is a gimmick or whatever. It's not. But it is. He is running a very specific style of offense, and it is an offense that is predicated around his ability to run, and it is predicated around the RPOs and all that. It's predicated around keeping you from running, from being able to keep two deep safeties consistently, because the whole thing is built around keeping out of true expected pass situations. He's not been very good in expected pass situations this year. He wasn't very good in expected pass situations last night for the most part. But the thing is that, when you say that, it sounds like you're saying he's not a real quarterback, you know, either hiding him. It's not that per se. It's because the ability to stay out of expected pass situations is because of what he can do on the ground. But he's already gotten injured doing that this year, and he scrambles so much. And like the question is like, can he keep up the scrambling indefinitely to be sustainable that it lets them do all the other stuff that they do that's built around that? And Caleb, not to say that he's been better to Jaden to this point, you know, to this, if you're just looking at EPA or whatever, you know, Jaden obviously has still been better on paper. But like the stuff that Caleb is doing is, once it clicks, is going to be a lot harder to game plan against because it's just straight quarterbacking. He's going under center and he's doing straight dropbacks. He's going under center doing play action dropbacks. He's playing out of the gun. It's full field reads. There's nothing gimmicky to what they're doing about it. So the success, when it starts to come, when it starts to stack, it's going to be sustainable because of how they're going about it. But yeah, that's, and Jaden again, like, if his first read's there, if you make a mistake, he fucking punishes it immediately. And he's deadly accurate. The ball placement from that guy is 80 grade. I will give him that. Like, that dude, his passes are handoffs. Like, that guy has some of the best ball placement I've ever seen. I definitely underrated that as part of his game. He doesn't miss. But if you can make him think a little bit, if you can make him have to move off that first read, and especially if you can move him off his spot, he doesn't throw the ball at all. He still doesn't throw the ball at all. He just runs. And that's what I think is so funny. There's this perception that, you know, Jaden was cool, calm, and collected, and Caleb was chaotic. And Caleb was a little jittery. But, like, Jaden gets jittery, too. The difference is that you see Caleb attempt passes when he's under pressure and attempt passes on the run, and the results are sometimes messy because that's what happens when you throw under pressure. Jaden avoids putting those ugly throws on tape because when he's under pressure and he's under duress, he just doesn't throw at all. He takes a sack or he runs. Now, he's a very effective scrambler. It works. It makes the EPA machine go burr, but just like, you know, we talked about with Jackson Dart and stuff, like, it's a question of how long does it work? Because we saw with Justin Fields, I mean, he had a historic run as a scrambler 1 year, and then the next year he was like half as effective, and it falls apart quickly. Now, Jaden Daniels, much better in quick game, much better at throwing to his first read, much better at playing on time than Justin ever was. But, like, it's just, if you can make Jaden have to sit in the pocket and read things out, you can still get him in a way that I think Caleb is making a lot of progress in that department this year.
Yeah, I had a nice long rant about how you stop Washington and how it's so simple in the offseason when we were ranting about Jaden Daniels and his rookie year. It's a skill check, essentially. The other team to play the most prominent defense in the NFL. Two high safeties, press man. That's it. It's very simple.
But
the problem is, it's their run game is the best run game.
Well, and
once you start moving defensively, one piece to help, everything falls apart.
Well, and again, it's what you know, the Eagles right now are struggling badly because they can't run the ball. And so it's allowing teams to play two high safeties. And Jalen Hurts has always struggled with that because he doesn't really run quick game, and he doesn't want to turn his back to the defense and under center play action. He doesn't want to throw middle of the field. So all you got to do, and I'm putting quotation marks, all you got to do is stop the run and you can plug the whole thing up. That's so much harder to do.
It's easier said than done.
Because Jalen Hurts, usually, now this year the Eagles are not using him as a designed runner, and I think that's a big part of their problem. But usually Jalen Hurts is the plus one in the run game. Jaden Daniels is the plus one in the run game. So that changes the math. It makes it very fucking hard to play the coverage the way you'd like to play it. But if you can do it, and the Bears got them into some expected pass situations and were able to get some takeaways and other stuff and you know, get a couple key stops by plugging the run on first and second down and putting him in expected pass situations and being able to blitz him and speed him up a little bit, he still struggles a little bit with that. Normally they're an early down chain moving EPA machine, but if you can get them to third and long, they are vulnerable.
Yeah.
And we saw Dennis Allen with a very good game plan to get them there. The run fits much improved.
So. Yeah. The issue with Jaden long-term, I guess, as opposed to Jalen, is Jaden's early success here is going to lead him to think, why do I need to care about reading defenses and, like, you know, doing things that go beyond the first 1.5 seconds of a play. And that's where you get into that trouble where Jaquan Brisker, you know, makes that interception last night. Jaquan gave that little Tim Jennings hop. That's a callback to many years ago. I don't know if anybody's going to care or remember that, but Tim Jennings used to be a guy who would watch film and he would zero in on a favorite play of a guy and he'd be like, God, if I see this, I'm gonna jump the route and I'm going the other way. And you could just see it when Debo came across that formation. He goes, oh, and he just gives a little hop and a skip, and he got right to where the ball was gonna go. He baited Jaden perfectly, and that's the sort of thing that Jaden doesn't care about right now because he doesn't have to care about it. But when the Bears push you into making Jaden throw a pass such as that because the Bears are stopping the run somehow, that's where those mistakes are going to come from. And that's what Jaden's Achilles heel has been so far this season. And that's why he's not quite as effective as he was last season. Same story with the Eagles. Yeah, it's been Saquon Barkley is stopped. Now what do you do? Okay, well, Jalen Hurts will settle for a four-yard out. He'll settle for a hitch, but it doesn't look very pretty. You're not moving the ball very well. And unless that run game opens up, the Eagles are going to continue to struggle as well. So, yeah, we're seeing like a lot of these guys who are essentially running offenses that are skill checks, that are talent checks. Like, you know, the Eagles asked the Chiefs last year in the Super Bowl, can you really stop Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts from running the ball down your throat? And if you can't, what the hell are you going to do covering A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith? And that worked. But in the end, that's a very simplistic, collegiate approach to football. And it wasn't always going to work. And maybe we're seeing right now kind of this slow, you know, turning of the tide back to guys like Caleb Williams, like you said before the season, taking seven-step drops, going back to the football we loved when we were children, right? You know?
Well, I mean, that's like, it's all cyclical, but like the reason it's hard to master. It's hard to get that experience. It's hard to get guys to play at that level. But the reason that you had them do it, the reason that that was what Peyton Manning did, is because that once you're able to do that, there is no one weird trick to stopping that. Like you just have to protect the whole, you have to protect the whole field. You have to rush the passer. You have to do all of these things. And then with Caleb, on top of that, he still has that ability to run, and he still has that ability to play off script. And so, like I said, long story short, no, we haven't seen the best out of Caleb Williams yet. And I just, people are taking that in such a weird direction where it's like, God, he still isn't the best that he can be yet. And I'm sitting here like, he's still not the best he can be yet.
Can you
believe
it? And
the results are pretty good so far. Like, holy shit, what is this going to look like when he's in year two in this scheme, year three? And that's the other funny thing is when people talk about last night, they're like, Caleb didn't do anything special last night. It was all Ben Johnson. Cool. Ben Johnson's not fucking going anywhere.
Amazing.
There's nowhere left to promote him to. There's nowhere left to promote him to.
Oh, no. We have a good coach for the first time in, I mean,
is
maybe.
Is it Belichick? Is it Brady? I don't care. They're both here.
Doesn't matter. The wins count the same if it's the like I would. You and I have been sitting here like, oh no, Kyle Shanahan, like just getting to the Super Bowl twice in 5 years. Yeah. Like, oh, send him our way. Like, oh, we'll take that bullet for the rest of you. Like, yeah, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
Let's see. We've gone over DeAndre Swift. I feel like we almost didn't say enough about Swifty. Great. He has been running hard the whole season, and the blocking hasn't been there, and he's been taking some bad cuts. Just a combination of both things. This game, everything really came together. Like, he knifed it up the middle. He went around the outside.
I
he
feel like Eric
blockers. Just
I
great.
Feel like Eric Bieniemy has had a very positive impact on him, because he is running. He's finishing runs. He's running through guys. This was a guy that, you know, toughness was considered a knock on him in Detroit and Philadelphia. Like, they didn't like that he didn't run through contact, but he's doing it now. So Eric Bieniemy is, you know, he's got him playing hard.
He scored on that touchdown on that pass, and he hit a rodeo drive. That's for my iShield 21 fans out there. Just what a great buck back and forth, and then he's gone for a touchdown.
How about Jake Moody, man? What a great story that was.
I can't believe we have it. I stood up and, you know, my guts were in a knot for that last field.
Oh,
goal.
I was fucking
and I, the moment washed over me, and I was just like, God, football is so cool that something stupid like this could happen in a Monday night game.
It
know?
Is. Yeah. I mean, like, that's, you know, I liked it that you said that, because I mean, like, here's the thing. This podcast, one of the things that I'm just like, so someone asked me, like, if Caleb Williams had a Dan Marino career, would you take it?
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, he doesn't want to. And I was like, absolutely. Because if you had a quarterback like that for a decade, what that means is that you're watching every game, and every game is worth talking about, and every game's competitive.
Right.
And there's a reason to do that. And like, I enjoy doing this podcast. I enjoy having a reason to care about this 17 games a year. And there's nothing worse. I mean, there are a lot of things worse, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't.
We get it. We get it.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than being like, than where we've been the last couple seasons. We're like, by November and December, I'm just like, I can't do this fucking podcast. I can't get an hour out of talking about how this game looked exactly like the last four games before it, and they suck for the same reasons. Like, I just can't do it. So, like, I want, like, just appreciate these moments. Here we are. We got a third straight victory podcast in a row, plus a fun bi-week podcast. We've had 4 weeks of fun on this thing. And you get a guy like Jake Mooney. Maybe he'll never kick another game for the Bears again. I don't know what they're going to do with kicker. But yep. This is a dude that's been – he's been a joke. He has been dumped on by everybody because – not for anything that's his fault. It's not his fault the 49ers took him in the fucking third round.
Yeah.
And this is a dude who had a good season with the 49ers and then hurt his leg and then missed some kicks after that. Kyle Shanahan lost patience with him. And here he is, like, delivers a huge fucking win, game-winning kick, which is what a moment. Like,
it's a fucking monsoon, right? And this guy is being asked to kick field goal after field goal, and on short notice, it's in the rain. And yeah, he's coming on here off of getting cut by Kyle Shanahan, maybe the most short-leashed guy on the planet. He has no patience for anybody. You know, he immediately comes out of the Bears. All of a sudden, he's got to fill in again. And, like, everything this guy has been through in the media, like you said, getting picked high. And then for it, even after that, like, having a kick blocked, you're 3-for-4 in this game, and now you have a game winner, too. Yeah. And it's just, like, how unfair to put it on this guy, but what a chance. Yeah. What an opportunity for this guy.
It's just, like, how can you not be romantic about football, man? Yeah. Like, hell yeah, man. Like, what a great story. Like, whatever else happens in his NFL career, he's got this. He's always going to remember. There's no way he's ever going to forget this night. Like, and Bears fans won't either. Like, because in the lore of the Bears now, we've got the fucking Hail Mary last year, and we've got this game. The vengeance, you know, to balance the scales, we had fucking Jake Mooney. And, oh my God, Commanders fans who have done nothing but run their mouth for a fucking year over that game to suddenly be like, it was a fluke. Yeah. It was a fluke. You guys didn't deserve to win. We gave it away. And I'm like, oh, what does that fucking feel like, guys? Yeah. You can't do that. You cannot pull that shit after running your mouth for a year over a fucking tipped Hail Mary. Fuck. All the way off.
Yeah, fuck you, Troy.
Yeah, fuck you, Troy. Fuck Troy.
You fucking asshole. How about... Kyle, we gotta throw some credit out there too for Richard Hightower's special teams. Boy, the kick return and kickoff team is bad.
They gotta be working on that coverage. They gotta be working on that kick coverage.
But Torrey Taylor's punts have been fucking badass the last couple games.
I'm gonna take credit for that. You know, because I think he could really I think he could tell that I was getting fed up, and he's really turned it around since whenever it was I went off on him on the podcast. He had a couple that genuinely flipped field position. And I mean, there was that one on that drive where the bullshit penalty on DJ Moore backed the Bears up. He managed to kick it all the way down, to Washington's 20 or 25.
Yeah, I think it was the 25. They got a short return on it. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it was great.
Kicked it out of bounds at the 7. You know, that amazing punt against Vegas that basically – turned that whole game on its head that got just stopped at the 2. So finally showing off the Torrey Taylor-ness of it all. So that's been nice. He was so excited for Jake Mooney after the game. He was bombing Caleb's interview. He's bombing Moody's interview.
Did you see the moment between Caleb and Mooney right after the game? That was nice too. Yeah. Caleb was fired up, man. Caleb can pretend. I love Caleb Williams, but, the man is the man fucking lies. Like, that man being like, it's just another game. It's just another game. You know, I treat it like any other. Like, that man wanted to destroy Matt Eberflus. That man wanted to destroy Washington. Do not believe a word he said. Those games meant so much. I mean, I think in Washington, against Washington especially, it did lead to him coming out a little hot, overthrowing things, playing a little jitterly early. He looked a little bit like last year, Caleb, where you can tell he's pressing a little bit too much in the moment. But again, as he's done, even in those, he settled down, locked in late. I thought he only had to throw one throw on that game-winning drive, and it wasn't, you know, yards-wise wasn't impressive, but I like people to know that, like, instantly read the coverage, ball came out as soon as he hit his back foot, and there's anticipation there. He's throwing that ball before Colston's even turned around.
How about the pass play he didn't throw it on? How about learning from earlier in the season mistakes that you might have made, right? Running around the outside. Sure, you could have taken a chance and thrown that ball, but you want to keep the clock running. You don't run out of bounds. You slide. The clock keeps going. Like, incredibly mature play from Caleb there. Also, we're talking about him lying a bit. He was a little bit open about, I think, the jitters after the game in his press conference. He mentioned he was like, oh, yeah, that play call. I flubbed the play call. Oz came over and was like, ooh, what clarification on that? And he was like, ah, we got it fixed. we got to fix the after the huddle, but yeah, a little bit jittery out there. So even Caleb's facade is kind of cracking. Like, yeah, I was not. Yeah, 100%
I mean, and just, you know, changing the culture. You can tell. I mean, I'll tell you what, man. I think the funniest narrative in hindsight from this summer was all the people that were hyping up Aaron Glenn. People were like, he might actually be the better coordinator hire from Detroit. Aaron Glenn was a huge builder of the culture there. Aaron Glenn, leader of men. Aaron Glenn this, Aaron Glenn that. Yeah. The Jets quit a fucking month ago. They're all at each other's throats.
Yeah.
And then Ben Johnson, who a lot of people are like, he's a nerd. He's a whiteboard guy, but can he connect with people? You watch that guy's post-game speeches, that locker room. Everyone watching the video, I would run through a fucking brick wall right now if Ben Johnson burst into my house like the Kool-Aid man and was like, you, slap yourself across the face right now. I'd be like, hell yeah, sir. Let's do it. I believe,
that man lives and dies with his team, with winning, well, and football.
And the rah-rah stuff, like, as we learned with Eberflus, you know, who tried to, you know, he was just a walking cliche. He tried to, like, that stuff by itself doesn't get you anywhere. The reason that all these, and you hear Caleb talking about Ben Johnson, he's like, yeah, man, he's a mastermind. Sometimes even on the mic, he's like, oh, this is a good play call right here. Like, he'll compliment himself as he calls the play.
Yeah.
And, but just, like, you can tell Caleb is 100% bought in. Caleb just believes, and that's what the thing is. These players believe and they buy into the rah-rah stuff because they know that, like, they feel they have an advantage in these games. They feel like my coach is better than their coach. And when crunch time comes, his play call is going to put me in position to win. That's why those guys buy in. You have to have all of that stuff first. And then the rah-rah stuff is the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
So
Caleb mentioned after that game, the rushing touchdown he had, the perspectives from him and Ben and DeAndre on that were very funny. Because Caleb mentioned with the play call, he was talking about trusting Ben Johnson. And he was like, yeah, when he sent that in, I got up to the line. I looked over there and I was like, oh, I'm going to die. I believed in Ben, but I thought I was about to get drilled. And then as the play goes, DeAndre goes out and he tries to throw a block. And then he kind of extends his arm and just throws the defender at Caleb. And Caleb's eyes just get real big, like... Finally gets in for the touchdown, and you can see DeAndre immediately running off, like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know why I did that."
I thought that was really funny when they had the official guy in there, because, you know, DeAndre grabbed that guy's jersey, and the guy was like, "That wasn't a hold because it doesn't material to change the play." And I'd be like, "I think that's the first time I've ever heard a guy be like, you don't call that a hold because this guy wasn't actually strong enough to hold him."
he did such a good job, it didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that might hurt a little bit, DeAndre, when you hear that one and you think, you know, weight room a little bit, but
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I just, like, the Bears are buying in, the Bears are believing, they have a run of you know, not to overlook the Saints and the Rat Pack, and you know, the snake. You got to watch out for the snake, Travis.
Watch out for Rattler.
He was playing some, I mean, him and Drake May were going shot for shot there for a little bit on Sunday. But yeah,
two of the worst defenses in the NFL going up against quarterbacks. Yeah,
here in Chicago, I think they have a real opportunity, you know, and then they get the Ravens, who are struggling, they get the Bengals. I mean, they have an opportunity here to really do some stuff. Hopefully we just keep on stacking wins. I think there's a really, you should be optimistic about everything happening here, folks.
Oh yeah. We haven't mentioned one thing I really wanted to highlight, which is the defensive line, which has also looked good for a couple weeks, but man, in this game, they were generating constant pressure, and they didn't always get home. We had two sacks in this game. Javon with 1.5, Dom Rob with a half sack. I think maybe Dom deserved the 1.5 and Javon deserved the half, but whatever.
Dom Rob was doing some stuff. The play where he was in coverage, you know what, we're just not gonna talk about that one.
That's not the play, Dennis. That's
not on you, big guy.
Play I think you call when Dio is in the game, because he kept it out there. Maybe he didn't know Dom was in the game, but Dom was like, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah, not surprised he wasn't active last night because of, obviously, it was he just practiced for the first time. But, like, I'm expecting Austin Booker next week. I'm excited to see if he can make a difference, too, because I feel like Dio has been doing some good stuff on first and second down. But, like, to have a true, like, pass rush specialist bookending with Sweat on those third and longs, those expected pass situations, that it would be really nice. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Austin Booker can do. I do wonder if the Bears, you know, if they beat New Orleans, if they make a statement there, if the Bears do start to look at some deadline moves to really trying to, if they start looking at this and being like, hey, we actually could make a run here. Maybe it is worth pushing a couple chips in. We'll have to see. But yeah, I mean, there's
we got to shout out Big Bill. He had a rough Big first Bill. Couple weeks. Boy, he is looking good.
He looked like our boy again. So,
yeah. But yeah, I mean, we can probably mention it by name. The rumors are so fucking hot and heavy that the Bears have contacted the Titans about a potential Jeff Simmons trade. That one seems to be cooking. It seems like the trigger would have to be pulled later on. I don't think that's something you do in week 5 or week 6. Yeah. But it all depends on the next couple weeks for the Bears on how we're looking. But yeah, God, I feel like I have to compliment Dominique Robinson when he does really well. In the last couple games, he has stood out.
Yeah. Which, I mean, again, I mean, testament, I guess, to maybe having actual coaches that know how to develop players.
Fucking crazy that you get coaches who come in and do not.
Oh, and I guess one last.
Did Mike Tomlin say coaches who don't
who run away? He's like, he's like, I love coaches who run away from the responsibility of coaching. Send me those guys. You know? Or send me the players that those guys don't want, basically.
Right.
I guess also, you know, he did slip and there was a busted coverage there because he slipped, but otherwise. That Commanders wouldn't even try Tyreek Stevenson, man. Wouldn't even
ignored Tyreek's side of the field like that, almost that, the whole game.
That should tell you something for sure. So, yeah.
Very impressed with Tyreek. He continues to have a great turnaround campaign. Boy, he needed it against Washington. I think we've just about covered everybody. Bears had I thought it was a fantastic game. Obviously, as far as watchability, the game was great. Usually if the Bears win a close scrappy game, it's a horrible unwatchable game.
No, I mean it's weird because it wasn't quite a shootout, but like both offenses did get theirs at times, but both defenses had their moments too. I will say I thought Dan Quinn had his moments too. Like they did a good job of clogging up the middle of the field. I felt like Ben and Caleb wanted to attack there, but they were doing I think Dan Quinn kind of used that against them.
He did.
That was the least that Caleb has really attacked the middle of the field so far this season. And I think that was not because they didn't want to or because he wasn't willing to try. I think Dan Quinn felt like – I think a lot of people said going into that game, oh, the Bears are going to target their linebackers and really go after that matchup. And I think Dan Quinn knew that too and did stuff to keep that from happening. So he didn't make it easy on him either. But, yeah, it was a back-and-forth game and – the Bears came out on top. There's just really.
It was a good game between two good teams, is what I saw.
Yeah.
One team came out on top. I think the Bears earned it. Yeah. I'm very, like you said, I'm very excited for at least the next 4 weeks. And then that lines up very well with, you know, the 2022 Lions system. All of a sudden, you turn it on at game 9. That's when all the hard games start for the Bears.
Yeah. All right, gang.
Well, go Bears. Fuck you, Troy.
Fuck you, Troy. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.